Welcome to another episode of Uncle Nene's Nerdcast. I'm your host, Nathan Fletcher, a.k.a. Uncle Nene. We have a great, amazing show today. I love authors. I love creators. I love storytellers. And we've got someone who's been doing it for 10 years now and has created some really interesting stuff that we're going to talk about. I'd like to welcome to the show, Tyler Snur.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Thanks for coming, Tyler. We're excited to have you here. You know, you launched your debut novel, The Jewels of Fate, when you were just 17, I believe.
Yes.
And so, you know, you've been working at them for a while now. You know, just tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got started at such a young age. I think that that's something that, you know, everyone would want to know.
Yeah, for sure. So I started out as a reader from a very young age. You can probably see behind me, that's one of the bookshelves I have in my room that is completely filled. So I loved reading, I loved books. And then there came a point where I thought to myself, maybe I could try writing one of these. And of course, then you get all your bad stories out, right? So there was a period where probably a couple of years where, you know, the keep them in the drawer kind of stories. You don't let anyone see them. But slowly as I wrote more and I developed my craft, then it grew to the point where I was working on a story that I thought this could actually be a published book one day.
Okay.
And that ended up being The Jewels of Fate, which is my first novel.
Wow. That's great. Storytelling is a talent and a gift. And there's a craft to it as well, but there is certainly, it is, for the most part, I feel like something that people are born with. What was it like when you're 17 trying to balance school, homework, writing a novel, making sure that you nourish that gift and feed that gift, but also taking care of the basics of living a life and life on life's terms type things. What was that like for you at 17? How did you manage your time and also stay motivated?
It's very, very difficult. And the further I got in school, the more difficult that became. So The Jewels of Fate took 5 years to write, roughly. So I would say probably about grade 7, and then I published it the summer before grade 12. So grade 7 and 8, I mean, school is important, but it's not as heavy as high school. So it was much easier to write in the early days and prioritize it. As soon as I got to high school and extracurriculars came into the picture and friends and homework and all of that, that's when it really yeah. started getting hard to balance. But I knew from the beginning that this was a priority and had already invested so much time and energy into it. I knew that I wanted to see it through. Now, I didn't know what that publishing process looked like at the time or when it was going to come out, but I knew I wanted this book to be published. Therefore, it was a priority despite all the other things going on in my life.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. I started my career pretty early too. I graduated high school a little early and when I was 16. And so I started working in TV production and found something I loved. Not a lot of people find something they love early on in life, and it's really a gift, and I'm grateful that you found yours as well. Let me ask you something. Your series has drawn from other people comparisons to Harry Potter or Percy Jackson. What were those inspirations for you, or were there other ones that really shaped your imagination as a young reader that you kind of attribute to be inspiring you to go that way?
For sure. The Harry Potter series and the Percy Jackson series, they are the series that I grew up on that are most similar to The Jewels of Fate. They're not the same. They're different, and The Jewels of Fate has, you know, a different spin and a twist. But when comparing my novels to popular series, I always say Percy Jackson and Harry Potter because that's the closest I can come up with. That being said, there were a lot of other series that I read growing up that influenced the inspiration of The Jewels of Fate. You know, the themes and the characters and the tone or whatever it is might not have made it into the book, but other series like Hunger Games influenced it. The Divergent series, Maze Runner.
Yeah.
One of my earliest series growing up was Hardy Boys that I read. Now, if you compared my books to the Hardy Boys series, they're night and day different, completely opposite. And yet the Hardy Boys series was inspiring for me to write the Jewels of Fate series.
Yeah,
that's along great. With the 50 other series I just mentioned.
Probably informed your storytelling as well in your actual prose. And yeah, absolutely. So for those who haven't read them yet, let me give you a quick rundown of the Jewels of Fate. It centers around Chuck Kingsley, who's a teenager from New York who discovers that magic is real. He's summoned to a hidden magical kingdom. Now, I'd like to know if I'm pronouncing this the way you would pronounce it. Is it Asanesia or Akanesia?
Oh, that's a new one.
No,
I've never heard it pronounced.
I totally
like
butchered
that.
It.
No, that's you didn't butcher it. That's okay. Not the way you say it, but I like the way you said it though. It's got a nice way of saying it. And it's actually pronounced Akanesia though.
Akanesia. Okay. I do this. My wife always tells me to do this. I grew up in South Texas, and so I was at one point very fluently bilingual, and so sometimes when I don't know how to pronounce a word, I attribute Spanish dialect. So it's in my head Akanesia, because that's how you would pronounce it in Spanish. So maybe that's where it came from. But you pronounce it, I'm sorry, Akanesia?
Akanesia, no. Yes.
Akanesia. Okay, great. So the magical kingdom Akanesia, Queen Elena is holding a competition to find powerful teenagers. It's a wild adventure, really is. Then in the sequel, The Sword of Sorinth, the stakes get even higher. Kayleen's sweet 16 birthday turns tragic, won't give away any details. But I do have some questions for you that I think anybody who's followed the book, they'll really enjoy. Where did the inspiration for the fantasy world come from? Did you draw particular mythology or stories when creating the magic system and creatures? You know, or was it, you know, kind of, do you attribute it to just coming from that certain special place that's in every creator's mind where they just make up stuff, where they build worlds and come up with the creatures? Was there an inspiration, or was it just out of thin air kind of a thing?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
The magic system in Akanesia. So for those who haven't read the Jewels of Fate yet, it's the kingdom has 10 cities within the kingdom, mm-hmm. that make up the world of Akanesia. And each of the characters, the whole population of Akanesia, is divided into 5 subcategories, which I call fields of magic.
Okay.
Basically, a field of magic is, it tells you what powers you have. It might tell you, you know, what interests you have, what skills mm-hmm. you have. For example, one of them is elements. So the main character, the Princess of Akanesia, Kayleen, she is an elements wizard, which means she is really good at controlling the weather and magic related to that, or talking to animals is a power that a lot of the elements wizards have.
Right.
Things like that. So everyone in Akanesia belongs to one of these 5 fields of magic.
Okay.
Now, although no other series has a field of magic, you can find this kind of segmentation of society in other books.
Right.
For example, if you look at the Hunger Games series, it's all broken up, you know, by district, and each district,
yes.
has their own, you know,
strength.
Type of personality, right. and feel to it. And even the geography is different. Same thing with the Divergent series. They have the factions, and that defines your personality and what job you will have in the, you know, dystopian world of Chicago.
Right.
Those are just 2 of the biggest ones I can think of, but there's hundreds more.
You know, let me follow up on that real quick, you know, because I think a lot of people will criticize magic or fantasy as like, well, they're just duplicating this other thing that's been done. And my philosophy has always been, you know, it may be reductive, but everything is really a copy of something else. It really is, what it's doing is it's speaking to a truth about our existence. We do all have our strengths and talents and our liabilities. We have gifts. Some of us have certain gifts. And so that's why it's used in all kinds of writing, is the kind of tribal or special gifts, things like that. Is that something that, you know, you think about when you're creating those types of things and talking about those things, how it kind of speaks to a truth that we all identify with?
Of course. And this is hard to say without giving away plot details of the book, but
right.
part of the Jewels of Fate story hinges on some of these characters accepting those gifts,
right.
and those powers, or denying it and trying to choose something else, which also you will see the struggle with in a lot of other books and movies. So absolutely, it speaks to the idea that, you know, we might have skills, or we might be born into a situation where skills and opportunities and circumstances are handed to us, but it's still a matter of choice of, do we choose that or not, for better or for worse.
Yeah. When you're writing, I'm curious with these books, Jewels of Fate and The Sword of Sorinth, is there a particular character that you really enjoy getting in their headspace and writing their perspective from? Does one jump out at you? Like, whenever I'm in this space writing this character, I just really enjoy it more than the others.
Absolutely. So I should preface that by saying the five main characters of the Jewels of Fate, Chuck, Kayleen, Kimmy, Dakwa, and Ryan. If you go on my website, snurstories.com, you can take a personality quiz to find out which character you are and which one you most relate to by answering the questions. So when I first started writing at this story and I designed this personality quiz and I incorporated this Fields of Magic idea into the novels, I thought I would resonate with one character more.
Yeah.
And then it turns out it was completely different. So that's an interesting question with multiple layers to it, because my personality matches Chuck's the most.
Okay.
The main character. So I'm a combat magic when I took the quiz, and that's the most popular answer I've heard. However, my favorite character to write is Kimmy.
Kimmy.
Yeah.
What do you enjoy most about when you're writing Kimmy?
She's feisty.
Okay.
And she's kind of a punch first, ask questions later.
Okay.
Kind of a girl. So there's a lot of scenes where she does something drastic or stupid or just kind of charges into battle.
Right.
And for me, writing those scenes is kind of fun. I don't know what the appeal is.
Yeah.
But I just love putting Kimmy in situations where she's going to knock a few heads and throw her knife at some monsters and things like that, and end up saving the day in the end
along
with the other four characters. But she's the most feisty of the five, whereas the other four are more reserved. So yeah, that's who I like writing the most.
Okay, let's go on an adventure. Are you ready to go on an adventure?
I'm ready. I'm ready. Where are we going?
Okay, what we're going to do is we are going to take the quest, the test, and see what is Uncle Nene. All right. So
all
can
right.
you see the test on the screen? Yes.
Yep.
All right. All right. So what's your favorite indoor activity? We already know what this one is. Yeah. Okay. Favorite outdoor activity. Out of these, it's actually going to be going to the zoo.
Interesting.
If you see $5 bill on the ground, spend it and ask everyone, ignore it, give it to charity. Okay. I think I'm going to do that one. I hope I do that one. Your favorite meal, Thanksgiving to Caesar salad. Oh my God. I wish it was Caesar salad, but it is ice cream with fries. Someone asks you for directions, talk extensively about where they're going. That's hilarious. No, I normally give them directions is what I would do. Favorite Friends character. What does this have to do with? But I mean, my favorite is what? You don't have my favorite. There's no Chandler. Oh my God. What do I do? Okay. Out of those four there, I think Phoebe's my favorite. Yeah. Choose the book you would most likely to read. I'm going to go with out of these, it's going to be Harry Potter, actually. Your favorite subject is actually lunch. I wish it was science. The celebrity you most would want to meet. Let's see. Oh, Robert Downey Jr. I'm an RDJ.
He's pretty cool.
Super fan.
He's pretty cool.
You would rather be skydiving instructor. That sounds really cool. I think I am going to go with skydiving instructor. Yeah. Okay. So now it's going to email. Let's see. My name is Nathan and my email is there. Let's see. Combat magic. Wow.
We're the same.
We are. Awesome. We're the same. That is great. Okay. So that was awesome. So I am combat magic. Wow. All right. Keep that in mind for the rest of the interview. Okay. So let's see. I did have a question about, without giving away too many spoilers, what sort of Sorinth that does raise the stakes? What did you want to accomplish in the sequel in terms of story or character growth? What did you set out to do? And of course, not giving away anything since the book just came out in 22.
I think to answer that question, it's pretty evident on the cover of the book. So you got to see them side by side to kind of understand this.
Okay, come on, let's see it. You got them.
The Jewels of Fate really centers on the five main characters because they each represent one of the five fields of magic that we just showed the quiz for.
Okay.
However, the Sword of Sorinth really focuses on Chuck and Kayleen more. Now, the other three characters are in the book, but Chuck and Kayleen are the most important. And I really wanted to make that clear when I was working with my illustrator on the covers that the first book is more of a team effort kind of thing where they're all together.
And right.
They share equal responsibility. Whereas the second book, they kind of split up a little bit and the story focuses more on Chuck and Kayleen. Hmm. So I use the cover to kind of convey that point a little bit.
That's great. That's great. Let's see. I read that the Sword of Sorinth hit number 8 in the fantasy category on Amazon. So how did it feel to see your second book rank among the top fantasy books so quickly? Did it, you know, I mean, I got to know, you know, what was that? How did that feel like?
It was surreal. The accumulation of a lot of work, not just in the writing process, but also the publishing process too. And there's a lot that happens outside of writing in order to, you know, put a book out into the world. So seeing number 8, it was a reaffirmation that these stories need to be told and there are readers for these stories.
Yeah.
Of course, the fantasy genre is huge and there are probably millions of fantasy books out there, but just that affirmation that these books belong in that roster with all those other books is it's a pretty cool feeling.
Yeah. You know, did you ever suffer from the imposter syndrome? Like, I don't belong when I'm compared to these other big names. Has that ever been anything you struggled with?
Yeah. Especially when I was struggling, do I do self-publishing versus traditional publishing? And I ended up self-publishing and I'm very, very happy with that decision.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. You self-published. Wow.
I did self-publish.
And made it to number 8. That's phenomenal.
Yes. And the reason is, well, actually there's lots of reasons, but the biggest reason is you get more creative freedom on self-publishing books than you do traditional publishing. And they actually can be more profitable than traditionally published books.
Yeah.
However, before I knew all this and before I, you know, took classes and attended conference and learned this, there was this perception in my mind that traditionally published authors were authors who had made it, whereas self-published authors were the rookies.
Right.
Yeah. So, but once you understand the math and what the industry is really all about and actually, you know, how books get sold and how authors make money, you can see that it's not separate like that. Like, you can be successful in traditionally published, in the traditional published world, as you can in self-publishing. But in a lot of cases, self-published authors can make more than traditionally published authors. So it's just a matter of picking the path that is right for you and your books and your goals and lifestyle.
That's great. I'd like to talk just a little bit about your writing journey and craft. Obviously, you started at a young age and, you know, been doing it for 10 years or so. So, you know, how has your process changed from when you were a young man, you know, to being an adult? You know, has that changed your writing process?
Yes. Well, my first stories I wrote were actually about my friends. And those are the ones that you kind of keep in the drawer and you never let anyone see.
Yeah.
So once I started, you know, writing characters of people that I didn't know, which my friends and family were very grateful for, because I didn't really do them justice in my descriptions and how I described them and all of that. So once I really moved into fictional characters, that was probably the biggest shift for me. But each book, you grow and mature. And for me, there's been 3 years between each of my novels. So 2019, The Jewels of Fate came out. 2022, The Sword of Sorinth launched. And now in 2025, my next book will come out, which will wrap up this trilogy. And each book, although it centers on the same story and has the same characters, and even stylistically is the same, people who know me, friends and family, can really sense the difference in maturity levels when they read my books. Because I was 17 in the first one, and then 20, and now I'm 23. So big life change.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big 6 years. You know, what do you, I wanted to go back for a second. So do you have the name of the book, the next book, or not? It's not out for public yet.
I don't release it until the book comes out.
Okay, that's fine. I just wanted to ask. All right. You know, on the craft side, I read that during high school, you participated in a student entrepreneur program called Summer Company to help launch the Jewels of Fate.
Yes.
Okay, so can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Absolutely. I can honestly say I would not be where I am today without the Summer Company, because they really opened my eyes to the business side of writing and how there's a lot more to publishing a book than just putting words on paper. Of course, that's the most, arguably the most important part, but there's other things that you need to do too, and other skills you need to develop. One of them I'm demonstrating right now, speaking in public on a podcast or in a webinar, or whatever it is.
Right.
But a lot of authors don't realize that, and it's a missed opportunity. Mm. So I'm very grateful to the Summer Company for helping me with this. And essentially what the program is they give grants to high school students to start their own business over the summer. So my business was publishing a book. At the time when I entered, I had the first draft. I had the Jewels of Fate almost completely edited where it was ready to launch, but I had no idea how to launch a book. And one of the requirements of the program is you have to actually put a product out to market and start earning money by the end of the summer, or you don't qualify for the second half of the grant.
Oh, wow.
So what that meant for me was I had 2 months to figure out how to publish a novel and publish it in a 2 month time span over the summer of 2019. So that
was someone to order that first one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It really was an example of trial by fire.
Yeah.
But I did. I ended up doing it. I ended up making my first dollar, I think, the last week of the program. So I just squeezed in there.
Yeah.
But along the way, they have mentoring meetings and they pair you with coaches and they give you all this information about accounting and business management and how to find customers, how to know who your customers are, how to network. They put us in our first vendor market, which was essentially where we showcased our product and we tried to talk to strangers who may or may not be interested in buying our products, whatever they might be. Once again, I didn't have a book out at the time when I was doing these events. So it was just simply talking about the book that was coming out in a few weeks and, you know, showing them flyers and building my email list. So all these important things that a lot of authors don't think about when they're first starting, but it really does make a difference.
That's fantastic. What a great program you have up there. You know, I know you also give author presentations and talks to inspire young writers. You know, for any young writers that happen to be watching this on YouTube or listening to it on Spotify or their favorite podcast platform, you know, what advice do you give that 15-year-old, 17-year-old out there that wants to write a book? You know, what some advice you can give them?
Age is just a number. And I talk about this a lot because there are some careers that require you to be at a certain age or level of maturity or go through a certain number of years of school. For example, you know, doctor, you got to go through 12 plus years of medical school or whatever it is. So it's, you know, very, I'd almost say impossible to find a 20-year-old doctor who's fully certified.
Right.
It's just not how the system works. However, there are other careers like writing that are skills based. And the more time you invest in, you know, building the skill and working on the craft, the better you will be in the long run. So it's just a matter of if you put those hours in early, then you can be a successful author at a young age. And I say this, I mean, I put in hundreds of hours early and I'm still growing and I'm still learning and there's still lots that I know and I certainly have not made it. But there was no reason why I couldn't do it at a young age. Therefore, I did. Therefore, I'm saying that to others that any young author can too. They don't have to wait to get a degree. They don't have to go through school. It does require hard work and practice. And your first novel guaranteed won't be your best novel. And you'll go through lots of stories that you'd shove in your drawer and hope no one ever reads.
Right.
But it is something that is possible. And it's so important to find people like my coaches in the summer company program or mentors that I've had who can pour into you and cultivate that skill if you really want it.
Well, thank you for saying that. I think it's great that you encourage through your own experience, write those bad stories that are about your friends and put them in the show. And understand you're going to have to go through those things that are just like when you read it, you're like, this is awful. I hope no one sees it. You have to go through that to get to the stuff you're like that is really good and put in the time, put in the working. You know, there's a stand-up comic, Jerry Seinfeld, and I love his interview. It's like, there's no such thing as writer's block. You just write bad stuff. Just push yourself through it. Write the bad jokes before you get to the good jokes, you know. You know, Tyler, let's talk a little bit about the reader impact and reception of the books. You know, I came across a comment from a high school librarian who said students at her school couldn't not put it down and that you have a good grasp on what teens like. So, you know, how does it feel knowing that your story has resonated so strongly with teens and even getting nonstop checkouts in a school library, you know?
It's an awesome feeling. That is what every author wants. Now, of course, you want to make money off of it and turn it into a career. But the whole reason we write stories and we choose this form of business and form of selling, because, you know, there's a lot of things that you can sell that aren't personal and aren't creative and aren't artistic. But us authors, we chose to write a story and then share it with the world. So
yeah,
that feedback is ultimately what we're looking for and what we're hoping for. You know, and the biggest reward for writing by far.
That's great. Has Hollywood come calling yet?
Not yet. Working on that one.
It's just a matter of time, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm also a screenwriter too, so I've got my foot in that world as well.
Really?
Yeah.
How does that work for you? Do you just start with screenplay or do you write the novel first and then go to trying to transition that to a screenplay?
You start with both at the same time, actually.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I have a screenplay that I wrote that I'm finishing up, and it's completely different from my books. It's a murder mystery set in a high school.
Really?
But the whole idea is you kind of play both fields. So if you're an author and a screenwriter, you want to have screenplays that might get the attention of your books, but right. You also want to have books that might get the attention of a producer who wants to make that into a screenplay and then a movie. Mm. So it's kind of going down both roads at the same time, and that's what I'm doing. So I don't have a screenplay of my books yet because I'm working on this original screenplay that has nothing to do with my books, while also writing actual books at the same time.
Well, it's interesting. It's that combat magic similarity we have. Wanted to create this world. So really what you're talking about, world building, you know, is I started with just a document that just kind of gave the lore and history of the world, how the magic works, the creatures, the monsters, the different, I did a map with the different regions and different dialects, different people, and figured all of that, how the economy works and how time works. And, you know, it's they have longer years. They have 720 day years, you know, all of this stuff, and figured all that out first. And then I've written some like little stories. I wrote a screenplay, all based in that world. But I like that method better. But what I realized for me is that I'm much better at the world building part than the actual writing part. Cause you know, that's just, we all have our gifts. That's mine is not, I wrote a short story. It was awful. I threw it away. The third screenplay I liked better, but it still needs work.
And it's so the awful. Question, it's a work in progress.
Yes, absolutely. Work in progress. There we go. So why, one theme I notice in your books is the idea of found family, that group of friends from different worlds, and then they become really a family, and that family is really who you choose to be your family is kind of more of a theme there. You know, is that something that's personally important to you, or is that something that just was on your heart to write about?
Interesting question. I've never been asked that before. So the found family, that it's personal to me in the sense that I read a lot of it in fantasy. So it's one of those tropes that is not universal in the genre, but you can find it in a lot of other stories.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's an important message to the world, maybe not for me personally. I mean, my family's great. Yeah. My family's super great because my mom actually helped edit my books. So,
oh, that's great. Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. So my family's awesome. And, you know, my extended family and you know, and all the cousins and everyone who's related to me. But for someone who maybe doesn't have that and doesn't have that support system.
Yeah.
Like, you know, my last launch that I did back in 2022, half the people in my room were my family. They were somehow related to me, you know, my cousins, second cousins, third cousins, twice removed, whoever you are, like you were related to me and you wanted to come support me. So it's great. So I know how lucky I am, but I'm also aware that others aren't.
Yeah.
And maybe this is why this is such a universal theme in fantasy genres and other genres as well, because you don't have to be alone and you can choose your family if you weren't born into it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's also the idea that your friends can feel like family, which I've experienced that too. Like some of my close friends, I forget that they're just friends and it's like more of a family thing.
Yeah. My family, we have that same mentality. We have people that are not blood related, but we've been close to them for so long that their family and they're part of the family. And that's kind of, so whereas I think, you know, I always identify with that message mainly because, you know, although I do have a good family, I can see how there are a lot of people who don't and we always adopt them into our family.
Exactly.
And so that is it's one of those messages that I really appreciate.
Yeah. Like I have an aunt and uncle who are not actually my aunt and uncle, but I call them my aunt and uncle because they're basically family and they're probably going to listen to this podcast at some point because they're also hugely supportive and I'm, you know, very grateful for them. So shout out to Aunt Karen and Uncle Keith if you're listening.
All right, Aunt Karen, Uncle Keith, way to go. Yeah, I am Uncle Nene to some nieces and nephews that are not blood related, but they're, you know, family somehow connected and they call me Uncle Nene and that's fine. You can do that. You know, one of the things that's interesting is, you know, of course, adults as well enjoy your books, although you write for teens. You know, are there themes and layers you intentionally include to reach both groups or do you not put much thought into that?
Yes and no. Okay. So it wasn't the focus when I was writing it, but once I got to the marketing stage and promotion, I realized kind of the appeal to multiple demographics and I started playing with that in my marketing. Now, when someone asks me who my books are for, I say they're for ages 12 to 18 because that's kind of the target audience I set up on Amazon. That's the majority of my buyers or parents who have kids in that age. That being said, there are certain aspects of the book that appeal to younger audiences and older audiences. And one of the biggest examples I can think of is I have a family friend of mine who's my age and he was not a reader at all. And then he read the book and loved it, gave it to his mom who read the book and loved it. And then she gave it to her mom, his grandma, she read it and loved it. So
that's great.
It's a generational thing, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Now, of course, my book is not for everyone, but it's definitely got this generational appeal to it, similar to Harry Potter or Percy Jackson as well. And a Star Wars too. That's another big one.
Yeah. Do you think, you know, that's a great story. Are there any other stories that come to mind that, you know, we're really kind of take you back memorable reactions or feedback that really stuck with you, you know, from people who have read the books, you know, anything else like that that kind of came to mind?
Yes. So many. The average time span to read my book is under a week, which is really cool and exciting.
That's great.
So there've been multiple times where I'll sell someone a book and then 5 days later I'll hear from them or I'll hear from their mom. They'll be like, when's the next book coming out? Can we get the next one? You know, what else you got kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it feels like I just gave it to them and then I turn around and then they're back there again. They're like, we want another one.
That's great. Well, that's the response you want for sure. So you mentioned the third book. Remind us again, when is it coming out?
I don't have a set date yet.
Okay.
At the time of this recording, so we're in July 2025. So I expect it'll be out September, October.
Okay. Is there anything at all you can tell us at all about the story?
If you like the first and second one, the next one is going to be big.
Okay. Big. All right.
It's going to be the climax of the series, like explosion.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. All right. So, well, I'm going to do a lightning round. So these are kind of quick, lighthearted, fun questions. I think you already answered one of these, but I want to make sure I got it right. So which character from your books do you most identify with?
Chuck.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but I wanted to make sure. All right. If you could have one magical ability or power, what would you choose from your world?
From my world. Okay, so from the books. The ability to talk to animals.
Oh, that wouldn't that be great?
Alien can do that, and I think that is very, very
yes,
cool.
Yes, my dog, who has been my best friend for 12 years, just passed away a couple weeks ago.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It was bad. You know, he was in pain, so it's better now, I guess, for him. But I miss him. I wish I could talk to him. That would be a great, you know, magical ability for sure. Okay, so name a fantasy world from a book or movie other than your own that you'd love to visit.
Hogwarts.
Right. Absolutely. Are you looking forward to the new series? Are you anxious or nervous?
I don't know. I've mixed feelings. I don't know. I've been watching a lot of reboots and remakes lately that have kind of fallen flat for me.
Right.
I didn't enjoy too much.
Okay.
Now that's no indication that the show is going to be bad, but I just right. know it's very difficult to do a reboot and a remake and keep it authentic to the original, but also better enough that fans really, really enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's a tough balance to find. So we'll see if the HBO Harry Potter series can pull it off.
Yeah. I am optimistic. Some of the casting choices I think so far have been great. I think it'll be interesting to see. One of the things that the movies couldn't do because of the pace that movies get made is that the kids didn't age at the appropriate way. So with a TV series, however, you can do that because you can make a season a year. And so the kids will actually age 1 year for one school year. It would actually be, if they do it right, that's how it would be. And that, I think, makes it better, I think, because, you know, from the movies, it's like by the time they made the last movie, it's like those kids are 30 years old.
Yeah. I agree. And it was, you know, they were kids the first, second, and third movie. And then it's the fourth movie. They're almost unrecognizable.
Yes.
It's only been a year. And then you're right. By the time the seventh movie came around, you know, Daniel Radcliffe was, I think, in his 30s. Emma Watson was older too.
Yeah. Okay. So a couple more quick questions. What magical creature or monster from any mythology, yours or others, that do you think is the coolest, that is just the coolest creature or monster ever?
I'm going to say dragons.
Oh, man. Yep, that's a good one. Dragons, you can't go wrong with dragons. I always liked the Lord of the Rings dragons because the idea was that they were a person, you know, a cognitive, and they could talk, and they had, I always thought that was fascinating. If the Jewels of Fate were ever to be made into a movie or TV series, is there a dream actor you have in mind to play Chuck?
Play Chuck?
If you were in charge of casting and you were like, I have approval, I get to approve the actor for playing Chuck, is there someone that you'd be like, oh, yes, they're perfect?
Okay. I have to say both Chuck and Kayleen, though, because I have acting choices for both of them.
Okay.
For Chuck, Timothy Chalamet.
Yep. Can't go wrong there. Hands absolutely down.
He's got that old soul kind of vibe that Chuck has.
Yeah.
And then for Kayleen, Millie Bobby Brown.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Absolutely. She was incredible in Stranger Things. Another one, by the way, right? Season 5, they're finally coming out with, and the kids are all 30. But, well,
yeah that's the, her. She's still like 18 or 19 or something.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so as a writer, last question. As a writer, are you a night owl or an early bird?
I'm whatever my schedule needs me to be.
Well, good for you. But yeah. What if you didn't have things on your schedule, would you be the kind of person that, you know, stays up till 2 or 3 in the morning every night and, you know, sleeps till 10? Or what kind of comes natural?
I write best in the morning.
You do?
I do.
Okay.
Productive wise,
yeah,
I'm better in the morning. However, okay, I do like a good night out.
And yeah.
Yeah. I have no problem staying out till 2, 3 in the morning if we're having a good time.
Yeah.
But working, it's, I kind of tap out somewhere between 12 and 1.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Everything in moderation, I suppose.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for coming on the show. This has been so much fun. You know, I really hope that for anyone's watching who hasn't checked out The Jewels of Fate and The Sword of Sorinth, you do so. It's on Amazon and you can get it both Kindle and paperback. Check out his website, Tyler's official website, snurestories.com. That's S-N-U-R-E stories.com. Find out which magic you are. I'm Combat Magic. Uncle Nene officially is Combat Magic. Don't forget to follow him on social media, Instagram, YouTube, all that good stuff. Before we go, is there anything, Tyler, you'd like to tell our audience to check out that I didn't already say, or any outgoing messages you'd like to send?
Yes. So I'm speaking to the parents.
Okay.
So another part of my business that I do, as well as writing books, is I've started working with parents on empowering them with strategies to help their reluctant reader become enthusiastic readers. So if you're a parent listening to this and, you know, maybe The Jewels of Fate sounds intriguing and, you know, I totally encourage you to go pick up the book, but maybe you're thinking, oh, you know, it sounds like a cool book, but I just wish my child would read more, or I don't know how to get my child to read more. I have something called a Reluctant Reader Breakthrough Blueprint that I would love to offer you. It is a session with me where I just give you strategies and tools to move your child from reluctant reader to enthusiastic reader. So if anything I've said on this podcast has resonated with you, but you know you have a non-reader in the family, I would love to connect and help you out.
That's fantastic. I really appreciate you doing that, Tyler. Yes, reading's good. Reading is a good thing. You know, there was a time where, you know, we didn't have phones and we had to read. But thanks for everyone who's watching. This has been a great episode. Please subscribe to Uncle Nene's Nerdcast and follow us on social media. Go to UncleNene.com as well. And thanks for watching. End every episode the same way. For the love of God, stay nerdy. Thanks for watching.